Question one, listener. Have you heard the good news? That's right, Years Quizzing, aka the next Good Times Everton Pub Quiz, has been announced, taking place on Thursday, 17th of April, 2025, at our official boozer, the Excelsior on Dale Street. What better way to kick off your long Easter bank holiday weekend than with six rounds of Evertonia? There's a £40 bar tab for the winning team, plus different ever-related swag of varying quality to be won throughout the night, and it's just £2 per player to enter. Put it in your diary, 7:30pm kickoff on Thursday 17th of April at the Excelsior.
The Good Times Everton podcast with Kevin Melling and Liam Knight, brewing the toffees since 1995.
I'm saying it's not just this season. It's 27 years.
Well, Kev, after the fun and games of episode 14, this is episode 15 of the Good Times Everton podcast, and there's not a particularly big gap between these seasons, because after covering 21-22, we're going back to 2021, aren't we, Kev?
Yeah, so you made the executive call there, as we're always entitled to do. It's a weird one, this, because it's probably the first time that I've regretted that we're not doing the seasons in chronological order, because it would have been good to introduce, you know, the pandemic in 2019-20 when it happened, and then talk about it later. But it's fine, like, in a way, this will kind of, going back in time to this one, just makes it, just highlights how surreal it all was.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most unusual season in our Good Times journey, definitely, because there's just so much about it is different. I mean, just going back to the start of the season, we finished 12th the previous season, but there's such a short turnover because the league season finished on July 26th and we're playing Spurs on the 13th of September. So there's no time for a real pre-season due to the COVID-19 pandemic, etc. We do fit a lot into this time, though, don't we? For only the second time in our history, we changed both shirt sponsor and kit making the same summer. As we did in 2004, we went to Umbro and Chang. This time we go to Kazoo and Hummel. And the Toffees launch a set of kits which the fans don't get to see an awful lot of in live action, but I think they're pretty smart, aren't they, Kev? You're on mute.
Sorry, mate. I love the blue one. I love the amber one. I'm not very keen on the green one, but that's okay. I thought the others were really smart.
Yeah, they are smart. I mean, I bought the amber one when it was on sale. The blue one, the reason I like it, Joe, you know, we were talking in the last episode 13, I should say, about the following season kits. The reason that echoes 97-98 as well, in my opinion, is it's a lighter blue, whereas this season it's a proper deeper blue, isn't it? It's the right shade of the blue, I think, the home kit this season. So I agree with you, it's really smart.
Big fan of Hummel from the start, really. They didn't have many misses with us, I don't think. But yeah, I thought that blue one, possibly my favourite home kit by them. I thought it looked boss on the players. Just like looked like it.
I'd agree with you there. I think it is, yeah. And I think the Hummel have done a disservice because they were generally poor Everton teams that were wearing them, but this is a decent side and it's a smart kit. I like it. It's quite simple, isn't it? It's just a simple design. It's like no frills, but that's what makes it lovely. But yeah, it's a busy summer, even though it's a short one. There are a number of signings made. The first of who bring in is Niels Nkunku, who comes in, the young left-back. He won't really feature much in our Good Times journey. And then there's a flurry just before the season starts with three signings between the 5th of September and the 8th of September. The first of those is the Brazilian midfielder Alan, who comes from Napoli for a major fee. Been rumoured in the January window that Carlo Ancelotti wants to bring him across. And then on the 7th of September, arguably the biggest signing in the Good Times era in some ways, Everton sign Colombian playmaker James Rodriguez. So, Kev, just taking you back to that day, how did you feel about the Blues pulling the James sign out the bag?
I remember someone putting it in the group, like a rumour on Twitter that was going around, and it looked like a legitimate source that Carlo was trying to bring him in. And I hadn't seen much of him in recent seasons. Like, you know, obviously he was everywhere the 2014 summer of that World Cup. But it was exciting. Those few days where he was rumoured to sign seemed to last a while you were waiting for it to be announced. And then the club kind of announced three of them, didn't they? On the bounce, and they were flouncing the marketing skills, shall we say, with the way that they announced them.
Did I remember the James one specifically because they done it with that and they did Richie dancing because he was Brazilian. So they had Yerry Mina dancing. And the reason I remember it was they said someone's coming at 7 o'clock and I'd gone the chippy up the top of the road to the house I just moved in. And I saw it on Twitter and I ran back with my food to put Sky Sports News on and all sorts because like it's finally happening. But it was a big signing and probably there've been some good players for Everton, the good times, but I'd say only him and Kanchelskis have been purchased as world class players. I appreciate your point about maybe he hadn't been the same at Bayern and his last days at Real Madrid, but Joe, a player of like genuine repute, I think he's probably him and Kanchelskis are the two biggest marquee signings. That's just maybe my view of the good times era, but yeah. It was a real coup, and you know. It felt like Everton were maybe getting a little bit savvier with their marketing. You know, they were doing stuff out in Miami, which you know they were hindered by COVID, but they still felt like there was a bit of ambition there, which I think was quite nice to see. Even
you know what though, like I know that they had that skyscraper lit up in Bogota, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
With like a big blue number 19 on it. Like these things might have cost quite a bit of money. And took a lot of organisation, but the thing I remember most over all of it was the like minute long video that was going around Twitter of them monkeys dancing to Spirit of the Blues.
I brought that up in the interview, didn't I, with Dan Haggis? Like, I love how good you didn't know it was a Coldplay video that you thought when that monkey threw his back and went, whoa, that was actually been made in sync to Spirit of the Blues.
I didn't know because it fit perfectly. But I didn't know what it was. Gemma genuinely thought, she thought it was an outtake from Planet of the Apes. not an outtake, but like an extra that they did.
Yeah.
Like asking about with the fucking animation of the monkeys. I was like, you winding me up. But no, apparently she was serious.
That's boss. So a little bit of a Lampardian twist there. Very nice. Your very own Lampard Jr. It's normally me who does that. The following day, the Blues signed Abdoulaye Doucouré. He's probably been on the radar for quite a while, especially since Marco Silva, who's since left the club, joined the Blues. There were also some new deals in the summer, including Michael Keane. Also, know they're getting a new 5-year deal, which, if you have ever had the time to read the initial PSR judgments, I'm pretty sure really factored into that because there was a player who's unnamed, and they say this is just my take on it. And they say in that report that they've assured in March of 2020 that this player was going to be sold, and Bill Kenwright was personally handling the sale. And they said that player received a new 5-year contract in the summer of 2020. So I'm pretty sure that was one of the deals that irked the Premier League later on down the line for our PSR troubles.
We deserve a 10-point deduction just for that, probably in retrospect. But he wasn't the only player that was unnamed, was he?
Yeah. No, and there were others. I know there were talk of maybe DCL could have gone to Arsenal. There was a new bumper deal for Mason Holgate on the back of some decent performances, but just some whispers about him going to Man City. So it was a bit of a frivolous time, to say the least. There are a number of departures. Sandro Ramirez finally departs on a permanent basis. Jesus. Martin Stekelenburg leaves. Kieran Dahl. Morgan Snyder had gone to Nice, I think, during the end of 1920 and for a massive reduction. It was only a couple of million pounds. Luke Garby, who finally leaves. Did you ever see him?
In Sefton Park.
He plays for Salford, doesn't he? It's not far, is it?
He had the Salford trackie on. Just in the the playground and that with his little girls.
Never blame him for seeing out that contract. He was never going to get something like that again, was he? So,
no.
Is what it is. Cuco Martina and Omar Nias leave, but also we'll talk about it more when we get to the previous season, but this is the first time since 06-07 the Blues have a season in which there's no Leighton Baines, and I think that wounded us both at the time, didn't it, Kev?
You're doing your quiet voice, your quiet solemn voice that you usually reserve for people who are like, you know, people who've passed away. But yeah, in a way, you know, a lot of the feelings there were the same. Speaking of that, we have got the death toll back this week.
Have we?
Yeah, it counts as one. Counts at one, as far as I can make out.
Right, okay. Well, we'll get to that when we come to that. There are some needless away kits as well on a lighter note, but the Blues have a pretty low-key pre-season. It's only two games. There are players such as Yannick Bolasie and Mohamed Bettis still on the books, but they've got absolutely no chance of figuring on the car alone. We don't see them. There's been a couple of changes in squad numbers. Anthony Gordon, who'd shone a little bit at the end of the previous season, goes up to number 24 from number 42. John Joe Kenny takes number 2 as Mason Holgate moves to number 4. I say this preseason is very brief. We go 3-0 down to Blackpool at Bloomfield Road before getting it back to 3-3. And then Preston North End are beaten 2-0 at Goodison. But as with the vast majority of this season, it's behind closed doors. So don't really want to dwell on that too much. What I do want to dwell on, though, is our start of the season. So we've got three summer signings making their debut, Decore, Alan and James, away to Spurs on the 13th of September. And this was actually a game we managed to watch together, isn't it, Kev?
Yeah, we watched this in the Arrow Park, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
We resisted at the age to get a lasagna in a pizza or a pizza in a lasagna, whatever it was that they had on their menu.
It was. I just need to explain that to the listeners. So basically, we couldn't believe our eyes. We went to this pub and had a menu, a lasagna and a pizza, which what this dish was one pizza, the filling of a lasagna, then another pizza on top.
And a pizza.
And we spent a good while laughing. Who'd come up with the idea for that, to be honest with you, Kev? Still, 5 years on, I'm still a bit mystified as to why someone thought, oh yeah, that's what the punters want. It seems a bit excessive.
Probably that Jeremy Corbyn, wasn't it?
Yeah, that damn there, Jeremy Corbyn, yeah, definitely. He's getting a lot of blame around this time for absolutely everything, wasn't he? But seriously, as Frank Lampard Jr. would say, the Blues are really impressive in their visit to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, in marked contrast to their visit a couple of months earlier. They're pretty much at it all day in this game, aren't they, Kev?
Yeah, we look like a good side this day, and the signings appear to have plugged a few gaps where we were really bad the season before. And
yeah,
I remember just thinking, oh, this James isn't pissing about, like, he's serious. He was great.
Yeah. It was some of his distribution was unbelievable. I'm like, I remember a montage, a bit where like he chests the ball down. He has like two or three players on him. He just seems to have so much time, didn't he? And it's kind of, at times this game, the shape's more of a 4-3-3. But Carlo kind of played the 4-4-2 a lot of the previous season when he'd come in. And James is kind of normally off the right, but it feels like the idea is, yeah, this player is mercurial, but if everyone else works, then we can maximise his ability and be dangerous. And there's only one goal in the game, and it's a beautifully taken goal. It's a free kick from the left-hand side by Luca Dean. I'd like to add as well, the kit looks great with blue socks. And he whips it in for Dominic Calvert-Lewin with a proper number 9 header to head past your mate, Hugo Lloris. And it was a win the Blues deserved, wasn't it, Kev?
Why is Lloris my mate?
Because you always just seem to dig him out and think he was overrated. And also, I remember playing you on FIFA once. And it was Arsenal, and you were Spurs, and I put a cross in from free kick, and Lloris just stood there, and it flew into the top corner, and you text me afterwards saying it's Lloris mess.
Very lifelike. yeah, I didn't really rate him. Always thought he had a mistake in him, like every big game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's mad. Like, he was at Spurs for ages, but it felt like every time something was wrong, he was like bang in the middle of it, wasn't he? Mm. Yeah. So anyway, in an unusual season, there is a really strange setup to the League Cup, because We play 3 League Cup games in the first 17 days of the season and then don't play again in the League Cup until December. Mm-hmm. The first of those games is Everton's only game to date against Salford City. The Blues have made some changes. Jared Branthwaite coming in. Much changed side, but on a midweek evening, they make pretty light work of them, don't they, Kev? Goals from Michael Keane, Gylfi Sigurdsson and Moise Keane put them to the sword. And I think the thing I remember most about this game and about this time, it is very difficult watching games at home. It's a very different atmosphere. But the fluidity of the football really struck me because we'd looked a bit ponderous at times the previous season, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. Carlos started to put a stamp on the team, like having got some better players in and got rid of a load of shite as well.
Yeah, and it feels like certain players, like, you know, players like Alex Iwobi, and maybe, I know you've discussed the peaks and troughs of Everton career in other episodes, they're starting to contribute a little bit more. I wouldn't say it's Iwobi's peak at Everton by any stretch of imagination, but especially when you go back and watch this, some of the interplay for some of the goals in these games is absolutely brilliant. It's really interesting to see, and given how turgid we'd been at times in 1920, it felt like a relief. And I think as well, people are getting a bit giddy because there's not much going on in the world at this. Well, there is a lot going on in the world at this point, obviously with COVID, but people are restricted, aren't they? You know, I know it's not full lockdown at this point, but it's not life as normal, is it? So I think people are kind of watching the football as a real escape from day-to-day stuff, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Blues then host West Bromwich Albion for the first game of Goodison in the league in this season. They take the lead through Grady Diangana's absolute screaming early on in the first half. It's a brilliant goal. And I don't know if you remember, there was quite a fuss that he'd been allowed to leave West Ham in the summer. Mark Noble tweeted about it, hadn't he? And there was a bit of uproar at West Ham, wasn't it?
Do you remember that, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So it was, he's looking promising. And whilst 1-0 down, Jake Livermore hits the post, which is a bit of a scare for us. And it's mad because I think when most people think back to this game, they think of Everton being in total control and Everton playing West Brom off the park. But at 1-0, we were on the ropes a little bit, but it doesn't last. The Blues get back in with a second goal of the season, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. It's initially flagged as offside, but do you know when we were talking in the last two episodes, I should say, about the luck of VAR?
Mm-hmm.
We get a bit more in this season, I think, because it's right. This goal is rightly allowed after initially being flagged offside, but it's because the West Brom defender goes to play the ball and plays it into the path of Calvert-Lewin, who just steers it home from very close range. And that then gives us a platform to build in the game. And it really turns just before half time because I think we just put up as one of our nominations for the goal of the season. Everton take the lead through the maiden goal of James's Everton career, which is, it's a beauty, isn't it, Kev?
Yeah, it's boss. Little left foot arrow into the bottom corner. Looks like it's going in as soon as he hits it.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And I think, like you say, the axiom of it is like, it's not a particularly powerful or fast shot. It's just, it's the utter precision. And, you know, the Blues are then further emboldened by two sendings off. First of all, Kieran Gibbs gets involved in an absolutely stupid off-the-ball incident with James, doesn't he? And ends up getting sent off. And then Slaven Bilic, who comes onto the pitch at half-time to complain about it, also sees a red card for his troubles, which I found quite funny. So you think at 2-1 at half time, well, the Blues probably going to kick on now, but they are pegged back by another screamer. I don't know how many of the goals or bits you've watched back from this season, but the Matas Pereira free kick for West Brom is a brilliant free kick, you know. The Blues have got a bit more resilience this season, so they then take the lead again through Michael Keane, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin ends up getting a hat-trick, which to date is still the last hat-trick by an Everton player in the Premier League as we record this in March of 2025. The first is a brilliant move, which really is arguably going in already from Richarlison, but like a typical striker, a bit like David Nugent for England all those years ago, Dom steers it home and then makes it five with a good header. So all in all, pretty good start, isn't it? And do you remember what happened after this game, Kev, on County Road?
Yeah, it was on the junction there, wasn't it, outside the Oak?
Yeah.
Some blue gave James a bottle of, what was it, Blossom
I think it
Hill
was
or whatever
Echo
it's called.
Falls, wasn't
Echo
it?
Falls, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like
A bottle of
bit.
rosé as well.
Yeah, no. Posh. Fair play to James for winding his window down and taking it. Like he seems happy to do it.
He seems genuinely like he's laughing, like he's finding it
Yeah,
quite
yeah.
funny,
I
isn't
know
he?
it is.
Yeah.
It is pretty funny to be fair. It's the funniest thing that's happened on that road since Patrick Berger got his car bottled about 20 years before this.
I don't
So
remember that.
you not heard
I
that?
didn't see any of that.
There was an incident with Patrick Berger. He drove fast and he started giving shit to the Blue Noses. So yeah, just got a load of bottles thrown at the back of his car.
The fucking toffees. So yeah, in a weird quirk, as I've mentioned about this League Cup run, the Blues then win 5-2 in the next game. They go to Fleetwood. This one, there's some lovely football in this, and again, there's some changes to the side. Nielsen Cuncu comes in, has a pretty good game, and also Luca Dean at centre half. I thought it was a bit unusual when Unai Emery did it, but then I remembered when I was watching this back that Carlo was there. Carlo at first come up with that. Say we play some really good football. Bernard Nwobi have come in. Some of the interplay is really good, but it is a strong side because you've still got Richarlison, DCL playing. Richie gives us a lead with a brace. His second goal, if anyone can't remember, I'd really encourage them to go back and see it. It's a lovely back heel by Alex Iwobi to play him in. But then what happens after that? So we're 2-0 up. We then lose a bit of control, and Jordan Pickford, whose form has been a bit up and down in the previous 18 months, makes a horrendous mistake for the first goal by Fleetwood Town. Now, this is scored by Mark Duffy. Do you know which local club Mark Duffy's played for?
Is it Prescott Cables?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember. He was at Sheffield United and came up to the Prem, and he was loaded because obviously we
No,
go to
no
watch
idea.
Prescott Cables from time to time. And he's a former Prescott Cables player scoring against the Toffees. I'm led to believe he's a Red as well, so I think he was buzzing to net against us. But
No, he wasn't
you know.
asked. He was cool about it.
Oh, sorry, I forget they're not bothered by us. But look, the Blues really show the quality. There's another great finish by Bernard. Pickford's a fault for the second goal from Fleetwood as well. It's an overhead kick, but he kind of palms it into the net. It's not great. But you know, we play some nice stuff. Iwobi scores again as he. This is the point in his Everton career where he either scores against Wolves or in the League Cup. They're the only times he seems to score. And you know, there's a really nice move for Moyes Keane to get his last Everton goal.
Looks happy about
You
it
know,
as well, doesn't he?
oh, he looks, he looks, do you know what? He looks ecstatic. And the mad thing is, when you look back, I mean, I know he makes a brief appearance in 21, 22, but he'd scored against Bournemouth last day of the previous season. He's actually in okay form, starting to grab goals. Yeah, I know it's not the most stellar opposition, but it just felt like following this summer that it wasn't going to work out for him at Goodison, didn't it? No, and we will come to that shortly because he does leave the club shortly after this for the first time. The Blues then make it 4 winning all competitions on the Saturday, going to Crystal Palace with a 2-1 win. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's fine, scoring form continues, gives us the lead in. I know we touched on it earlier. This yellow away kit's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, great. It's lovely. Like, just the Hummel have nailed it because they've picked probably the most recognisable Everton away kit and thought, yeah, we're just going to make our little version of that. It's lovely.
It is. It's. And you know what? It sounds mad, but like, I know we'll discuss it in other seasons. But like, I feel like when the Coq Sportif did it maybe because it was the navy blue they went for. They didn't make a great fist of it. They could have been better. I feel like it is the classic blue and amber, isn't it? No frills, just really smart. And yeah, the Blues look great in this day. They're pegged back by Cheick Kouassi, but then we get a controversial pen for handball by Joel Ward, which again. Go to the thing I was discussing about before and how when we discussed 21-22, it's mad how people seem to get a bit more luck when they're in better form, doesn't it? How things just go their way, etc. And the pen is dispatched by Richarlison, and The Blues are looking pretty nifty at this point, aren't they, Kev?
Yeah, and top of the league now as well.
Top of the league, yeah. Another thing as well, we've spoke a lot about the Hull stuff. When you see the interviews for this game, see like some of the staff in like the pink training gear. What did you think of that? I thought it was a bit loud, but it was actually quite smart.
It was all right. That training gear, this is boring, but like the cut on the collar wasn't quite right.
Yeah,
it was too baggy and stuff, and I don't know. But no, I quite like the light pink. I always think that looks quite good with Everton stuff.
Yeah, it does. It does. And then, on the 30th of September, which I remember because it's my dad's birthday, the last Everton hat trick is scored when we vanquished West Ham 4-1 in the League Cup. Do you remember watching this game? Do you remember how you had to access it because it wasn't on Sky and that?
No, I didn't watch it, so I wasn't going to ask that. The League Cup, it's just not something that I'm going to go out of my way to access.
Yeah, I did pay the £10. I paid for it for my dad as well for his birthday on the EFL website to watch this game. And
that's different, yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. No. We'd gone to see him, but we could only be outside. And then I sent them the money to pay for it and then paid for it myself as well. So I had to pay for it twice. I spent 20 quid on this game.
What a hassle.
And yeah, like, and then I think I had to go like, through the PlayStation to stream it onto the telly and stuff like that. It was a bit of a rigmarole.
I remember listening to it on the radio while we were watching something else on the telly. I did that with most of these early League Cup games, yeah.
It was worth it though, because DCL gets this hat trick and his first goal is an absolute beauty. Michael Keane clips the ball from about the halfway line. It's the runner. DCL, who he's full of confidence, and it's mad to see the players maybe lack the shortness in front of goal in the past couple of seasons at the time of recording this. It takes an incredibly deft touch to take out the Sky and then clips it past the onrushing Darren Randolph to give us the lead. And, it's a brilliant goal. It's a brilliant goal. You know, we then were pegged back, but not for long. Richarlison has a deflected effort from outside the box, which goes in. And then Iwobi hits the post and, DCL gets a third, and then for the fourth one, Iwobi hits the post. And Dom at this point is an absolute predator in the box because he's onto that straight away to make it 4-1. And Ancelotti seems to be getting the best out of him by, I know DCL spoke at the time, but tell him to follow the example of Pippo Inzaghi. And this is, I'd say it's probably the best version of Calvert-Lewin at Everton at this point, isn't it?
Well, it's the one that gets the most goals, like by some distance as well. But yeah, he's on fire, Don. There's a good clip with James and Yerry Mina where they're talking about him. And they call him El Hombre en Llamas, which means the man on fire. And they're just laughing about it for some reason.
I love that. And it's mad looking back at this. I mean, we've touched on it in other episodes, but when there's togetherness and that. There's pictures from this game, all the players celebrating. They seem like they're getting on as a bunch together as well, don't they? As the squad, like, it seems a bit harmony, which, a few years of a bit of a haphazard transfer strategy, etc. It seems like a bit of a harmonious place. I say that's haphazard, but it was in the past. I'm not saying it isn't this season, because it's very clear to me that some of the signings are being made by the club or by Marcel Brands, and particularly Alan and James, they strike me very much as deals done at the request of Carlo.
Yeah.
But by the same token, who are we to say Carlo can't get what he wants? So that September finished, and we've packed a lot into a really short month of Blues, but we're going well with the six wins in all competitions. We then extend that to seven wins on the spin on the 3rd of October with a 4-2 win from Brighton. Now, sorry, against Brighton, I should say, at Goodison. Now, this is a game I remember really well. I actually went out to watch this in a place called Wolf and Waffle on Berry Street in town with a few friends. And I actually think this is one of the games I enjoyed the most season, not just because of the win, etc. But we were able to sit outside because of COVID restrictions. And even though it was a cold day, we just sat in this beer garden with the telly to ourselves. There were like six of us. And Everton with a 12:30 kickoff. And we actually stayed there, watched the 12:30, the 3:00, the 5:30 and the 7:30. Or the 8:00 game, and just stayed there all day. So at a time when things were a bit grim, it was a pretty fun day out. What are your memories from this game, Kev?
I remember thinking, because we'd won, we started off with this winning run. I was just waiting for it to come to an end and thinking, where's it going to be? And I think Alan had got injured, hasn't he? Adam Ian wasn't playing.
Yeah.
Tom Davis was in for him, and that seemed like a bit of a downgrade for me. And Andre Gomez was out as well. So we were just starting to lose players, and I thought that maybe this is the one where it'll come undone a bit. But it didn't like there's a couple of setbacks in the game. But I thought we played really well, and this was the I thought actually no, they've proved me wrong here, and they look like a serious team. I was watching
Yeah, it was quite
the
an authoritative support performance, wasn't it? We take
yeah.
the we take the lead through DCL, who, as I say, he's on fire from a short corner. It's worked well. Gylfi Sigurdsson pops a great cross in with his left foot. It's a great finish. But then there's another mistake from Jordan Pickford, and I think why it annoys me the most is who benefits from it. Kev, who scores for Brighton after Pickford's mess up.
It's Mr. Mope, isn't it? The Mope.
Yeah, history repeating itself. Neil Maupay scoring in front of the Gladys. Doesn't happen very often, but it happened in episode 8, and it's happened here. But the Blues then really do stamp their authority on the game with the Colombian connection. Yerry Mina makes it 2-1, and then a brace from James really put them to the sword. And I think there's loads of great photos in this game of James in like the pouring rain, the deep blue of the kit. It looks really cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just made me sad that there wasn't like a crowd there to enjoy it and for him to have that interaction with the fans. It seemed like this would have been the game where that really blossomed.
Yeah, I think it's a more enjoyable, even though it's a lesser score, it's a more enjoyable win than the West Brom one, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Brighton are a better team than them as well, so it's more of a gives you more of an idea of where we're at. But watching this back on the highlights, the fake crowd noise was doing my head in, you know.
Looking back, it's mad how quick you got used to it, but it was weird, wasn't
I
it? It was like.
it watching it again, it was triggering me. Like just that nondescript just kind of din that they had. It was when you could watch the match with a choice, I always had no crowd noise. I just watched the game as it was happening. Like that was like infinitely preferable to me. I just found it reductive. I didn't think it added anything to it because it just sounded so fake. I'd always choose to drop it.
Yeah, I get Matt. I get that. I get that. It's not for everyone. I don't know. I think I found it too quiet without it. I don't know. It was suboptimal, whichever you look at it, wasn't it? You weren't going to be elated because you weren't getting to see football live, which
No,
is
it was all a compromise, wasn't it?
But an actual compromise, not a full leotard or compromise, a genuine one.
A bit like a
Just
fully
ask.
saddle compromise, though. Like,
Yeah, I suppose that we're very unhappy with the
yeah,
outcome. That
equally
is true.
dissatisfying, yeah.
Although we're not shouting Uncle Philly at the telly, are we? We're eating grilled cheese off the radiator.
Uncle Philly, my balls.
Just after the Brighton game, the transfer window comes to end, and there is a little bit of activity. Theo Walcott, who's not really figured much this season, joined Southampton on loan for the remainder of his Everton contract. Moise Keane, who we've already discussed, goes to PSG, which seems to be falling upwards, if you ask me. And then we also secure a couple of signings. Robin Olsen comes in on loan to give a bit of competition to Jordan Pickford, which I think was really welcomed by a lot of people at the time, wasn't it? Because Jordan, it felt like he was floundering a little bit, didn't it? And then the big signing towards the end of the window is we spent about £20 million on Ben Godfrey from Norwich. How did you feel about Ben coming in? Were you fussed? What were your thoughts on it?
I hadn't seen much of him. I thought we needed a defender, so I was fine with it from that point of view, and I'm happy to see how he got on. Speaking of the Everton like announcements, and you said about having Richarlison for Alan and Yerry Mina for James. Do you remember what he did for this one?
No, go on.
They just put up a gif of Calvert-Lewin and Tom Davis just like nodding each other at each other, just like giving each other the nod.
Is quite good, though, isn't it? This still
It was
makes for an
funny,
epic
yeah.
performance. Now that you say that, it's jogging memory a bit. But look, I think Ben's best football probably comes for Everton this season, or most consistent football, doesn't it? In
Easily,
his
yeah.
season. Easily, his physicality is really impressive. He's really athletic. I think he's really good the majority of times we see him this season. And we have to wait a couple of weeks to see him because, you know, in the middle of an international pandemic, there's still international football, you know, Nations Leagues and friendlies and the like. And there's a 14-day gap between games. The next game on the 17th of October is against our friends from across the park. And it's mad how much history repeats itself because in 97-98, I think we played Liverpool on the 18th of October, and it might have been the 17th, 98-99. You know, there seem to be a lot of derbies around this time. And I talk about history repeating itself as well. There's some echoes to the last ever Goodison derby in this one, isn't there, Kev? Because you've got the same scoreline, 2-2. You've got and you've got an explosion caused by a centre-half in front of the Gladys Street. But in this game, it's not a celebration of Tarkowski's goal. The explosion is, unfortunately for Liverpool, Virgil van Dijk's knee. He collides with Jordan Pickford after the Reds have took the lead. And it causes a bit of a stir, doesn't it, Kev, this incident between van Dijk and Pickford? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and the aftershocks are still going on to this day, aren't they? Just a fucking ridiculous situation. Like, all the players that they've had over the years that have been media darlings, he is just out there in front, yeah. And it's just complete madness.
Well, especially because you consider there was a lot of stuff on Twitter at the time that, because very early on in the game, Liverpool take the lead, and very early on this challenge with Van Dijk, you know, was it James? He left one on, and like there was kind of a celebration across their social media of it, wasn't it? Like, oh, welcome to the Premier League and stuff like that.
He did. He did Calvert-Lewin as well, and there's one on James, and the live text for the game was kind of making light of it, saying, oh, you know,
the BBC one, wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah, Van Dijk with it, whatever it says. I should be able to find that somewhere, but it basically says that Van Dijk is telling everyone who the daddy is, which, as we all know, is Phil Kerwin. But that's not who they're talking about. They're talking about Van Dijk himself.
That's a different story, definitely. Yeah, Phil is the daddy. But look with my take on this situation with Van Dijk and Pickford, it's a stupid challenge from Jordan. But it's not malicious. He's gone for the ball. It's just his judgment's just a bit off at this point. And, you know, it's really unfortunate for Liverpool that he's got this bad injury, and, you know, it's not really necessarily want to wish on players and stuff like that. But the social media reaction and the reaction to Pickford, maybe it's because there's not a lot going on in people's lives because of lockdowns and restrictions and stuff, but it's so disproportionate, you know, getting death threats and stuff over. It's not a good challenge, but it's clearly an accident. He's not gone to do him, has he? It's not like he's, you know, it's not like a Roy Keane on Alfie Harlan moment, is it? It's a genuine challenge. It's badly misjudged, but, you know, nothing comes with it because Van Dijk is offside, and, you know, the Reds seem to gloss over that when Ibrahima Kanate wasn't subject to a penalty at Goodison recently because Beto was offside. Unfortunately, it does cut both ways a little bit, but the fallout from it was just absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion, and well over the top, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's a bit like the challenge itself, but that is the overriding point about this. The important thing is that he was offside. End of.
Yeah. If he was stood in an offside position, it wouldn't have happened. It's fair, he might have scored. But it is, you know, I don't think anyone is pretending it was a good challenge or anything like that. But just, you know, I think there's a worse challenge in this game, which was with a lot more malice, which we'll get to shortly. But Liverpool have took the lead and...
Hang on a minute. Going back to the Van Dijk thing, I found a clip here that I bookmarked a while ago.
Okay,
it's the Redmen TV, and I'll share it now. We'll listen to this because it's their reaction. It's one of the, you know, fucking YouTube watch-alongs, which I still can't believe that anyone actually watches.
Different strokes for different folks, mate.
Used to their own, I suppose, but I mean, it just boggles my mind. I'll get it now, hang on. Right, so I'm going to play this for you. Ignore the snooker on there. Tony Grant playing snooker.
I can't see anything. Just all. Oh, there we go. All right, so yeah.
You see it?
Yeah.
Right, so it's this one, yeah.
Yes. Bit of an early clattering there for James Rodriguez. Welcome to the Merseyside derby.
I said it would be Robbo, didn't I? But now it's Virgil van Dijk.
But Not any. Oh yeah, just a solid thigh to the glands. Oh god,
yes.
Mashed potatoes for James Rodriguez. Yes, indeed.
The old picture by the Liverpool medical staff.
Oh, it's an awful challenge.
It's reckless. It's endangering a player on the football field. It's terrible. It's late. It's high. It's fucking useless. It's not even reviewed.
How are we, son?
Yeah.
It's useless.
Look, it's a bad challenge, no doubt. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, I think if Pickford had been sent off, we'd probably gonna have any complaints. It was just a fallout of our man. And, like, how long it went on for. And, look, Liverpool have a bit of a dip this season, but it's not just down to that tackle or that incident. There's a number of factors. And, you know, this has an impact on Jordan's mental health. I think it's just really not cool. And, you know, he must have been terrified when that fellow was making Sean promises about him. I thought that was really intimidating, personally. But what can I say? It's just a game of football. And back to the game of football. The Reds taking the lead, but the Blues pegged them back. Michael Keane, who's popped up with a few goals now, isn't he? He's got a shoot boot on. But Everton are great in this game. This is the first game where this season where they've been on the ropes quite a bit, isn't it, Kev, this derby?
Yeah, I should have known that it wouldn't be the Brighton game where we fell. I should have known what the next fixture coming up was.
Yeah, definitely. And Liverpool take the lead again through Mo Salah with a really smart finish. But the Blues show a bit more character than they've probably shown the derby for long periods during the good times here. And a proper striker's header from a wonderful cross from DCL sees us peg it back to 2-2. And do you remember who was actually in goal for Liverpool this day?
Yeah, it was that big Swaz Adrian, wasn't it?
It was Stamp's best mate, Adrian. Do you remember when he did that like list of things he hates? It was basically just 20 ways of saying Adrian's name. It was stuff like Spanish goalkeepers who wear number 13 and play for West Ham and stuff like that.
Goalies knock us out of the cup in a penalty shootout.
Yeah, it was stuff like that. Yeah, former good times villain. A good times villain, we should say Adrian is in goal for Liverpool. There's then a bit of controversy towards the end. Ben Godfrey's come on for his Everton debut in place of the injured Seamus Coleman. But at the end of the game is pretty lively. Richarlison sees a red card for a tasty tackle on Thiago. I don't think we can have any complaints about that one, can we?
No. No, it's a red card all day.
It's an absolute... It's a worse tackle on the Pickford one because it is malicious and it is like it's, you know, I think it's a well worse tackle on the Pickford one. And, you know, maybe it's because Thiago isn't as influential in his Liverpool career, but maybe there's less of a fall because of that. I think it's a well worse tackle. And then in injury time, Liverpool think they take the lead through Jordan Henderson. I was fuming when this went in, you know.
Yeah, same. I just went upstairs, sulking.
We had our friend Chris Tetlaff was over because you'd have some guests at the time. He'd come over and sitting. Me, him, and Emma were sitting watching the match. I punched like the arm of the couch and started going every fucking year. I'm sick of this. I was fuming. And then if this allowed for we'll call it a marginal offside. But do you remember sending me? I think you sent me. I don't know if you sent a message to me on the group saying how much you loved the cheer when the goal was disallowed from the Everton bench, and when you watch like some of the highlights about the audio and you just hear the Everton bench go, yeah, when it's disallowed.
See, this is why you need to listen without the crowd noise.
That's a fair point. I'll give you that. And also it spawns, I know we touched on another little social media before. We don't like to do that too much, but this is where this lad who doesn't do absolutes is running around his house shouting Hendo score to his mum and then finds out it's offside, doesn't he?
He was like the yin to my yang in that moment. Because I'm watching it with Gemma as well, who is from the dark side. And I just heard her shouting up the stairs. Not even shouting, just kind of like, just, you know, groaning a bit more than usual, saying, it's been disallowed. And I'm back down then.
Bolted now. But you know what, as well, the one thing I would say is, you were talking about the local VAR, because if that goal is disallowed for us, you're livid, aren't you? It was like, I don't even know how they calculated it, to be honest with you. It looked onside to me.
Probably just trying to even it up after the terrible decision to send Richarlison off.
Yeah, we'll give them one. We'll give them one. I mean, it wasn't as big a bottle job as the Suarez one that we discussed in episode 4, but it was a it was pretty lively. So, yeah, the first game we haven't won this season, but we're a bit like the vintage of Everton at the time of recording. The Toffees are unbeaten in 8, aren't they? You know, in all comps coming into this, but that isn't to last, like you're saying. We go to Southampton on the 25th of October. Richarlison's missing, a few players are missing, and I think we get a bit of kick karma for needlessly wearing our mint third kit at Southampton, and we're dispatched pretty easily. A poor performance, isn't it, in which Luca Dean sent off. And 2-0 to
Sweet. Just a miserable couple of hours. Like, yeah, the mint kit, you know, ironically doesn't look mint at all. Terrible decision. Alex Iwobi's terrible on the left wing. Gets taken off at half time. Ben Godfrey's really bad. You know, he carries on at right back after he's played quite well against Liverpool and just stinks. Michael Keane's like a statue, but like one of the statues on Crosby Beach, you know, the Anthony Gormley ones. But one of the ones that's like buried waist high in the sand.
Yeah.
Just awful defender from him.
Sorry, I was looking at Newcastle, no mistake.
That's it. Really. Like the Dean red card's really weird. He has a couple of goals, doesn't he? Carl Walker Peters, but
it's so stupid. Like the game, it's so late on. The game's gone. It's just
he does seem to slip over a bit, but it's unfortunately for him, the point where he slips over is when his other foot is just on the back of Walker Peters' leg. So it's not
as disastrous, but it reminds me of the Son one against Gomez in 1920, Joe, like where he chases him down to do him, and then like, what, me being sent off? It's the thing as well, he's really good this season. I mean,
yeah,
one of the things about the following season is the drop-off in the creativity and goals. You know, he gets 7 assists, and you've got players like James and Sigurdsson who are providing goals and assists, and it's a blow to lose him. And you just was on the next game there after losing to Southampton. We then go to Newcastle on the 1st of November and lose again to a Callum Wilson brace. Not for the first time. Sorry, not for the last time this season, I should say.
Do you know Callum Wilson, Dave?
Yeah.
Is joint 6th in the list of players who've scored the most goals against Everton in the Prem.
Mad, that, isn't it?
He's got more.
King's high up as well. I was looking at that for some purposes today, which we'll announce in due course. But I was looking at some of the scorers. He's got a lot of goals against us, hasn't he?
Well, King's 6th as well. So Wilson and King have both got 8 against us, which sounds exactly right. They're above Anthony Martial. Unbelievably.
I think what it was with Martial as well was like, because of the Wembley one was so big, I felt like every goal was a dagger after that. And the thing with them, maybe less so with King, but both those players had good runs of form with Bournemouth and Wilson for Newcastle, whereas like with Martial, he was really hit and miss for United, mainly miss, wasn't he? But it felt like every time he turned up against us, he scored. Because you're like, Wilson gets a fair few goals for Newcastle in the season outside of these games, doesn't he?
Yeah, and the list of players who... list of players who've got 6 goals against us. It's proper a collector. So these are all joint 22nd. So there's your mate Dennis Bergkamp.
Yeah.
There's Frank Lampard Jr. Danny Ings. Get on this one. Nobby Solano.
Yeah, but because we had a couple of hidings at Newcastle North. I remember a game in 05-06 where he scored an unbelievable goal. It was first of a brace, wasn't it?
Yeah, but 6 though. Like, there's players on there who I'm like, oh yeah, they always scored against us. Like, Benteke.
I think he got one for Villa as well in the 3-1 in 05, you know.
Like, Origi's got the same number of goals as Origi. Gary McAllister. Robbie Keane. It's like, it's mad. Anyway, go ahead.
It's mad though. Like, I feel like of Lampard, you feel like they scored more, Lampard Jr., they scored more against us. So it's quite an interesting point that I think you're right. And it may well feature in future quizzes, so listeners, beware of that. Wilson gets a double, but he doesn't get them past Jordan Pickford, who for the first time in 120 Premier League games doesn't start because Robin Olsen's coming for his debut and does okay, doesn't he? Even though we lose, he's not particularly bad, is he?
No, and yeah, Jordan's been a bit erratic and it's probably needed. It's like I think Carlo sees Olsen as a player who's at a similar level to Pickford at this point, so he's got no problem rotating as goalie, if you can call it that.
Yeah, I think because let's be honest, he's not really had any competition because when he first came in, Robles and Stekelenburg, they weren't as good as him. There are some additions. Jonas Lossel was brought in the summer of 2019, but obviously didn't seem to provide any competition at all, did he? He never played for Everton, did he? Which I think he deserves for picking number 49 as his number, but that's a different conversation for a different day. I agree with you. I think it's mad. Pickford probably deserves to be dropped, not just the issue what happened in Derby, but also the mistakes against Fleetwood, the one against Brighton. This is probably the worst form of Everton career, but weirdly, I think in the long run, it's the dip that makes him a better goalkeeper in the future.
Yeah, it's a bit of a kick up the arse, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's needed. But the Blues are losing 2-0 when Dominic Calvert-Lewin snatches a goal to death to keep up his fine score and form. But when it's not a game where I think we can have any complaints about losing a bit like the Southampton one, isn't it, Kev? We're not really at the races in this day, are we?
No, I've got a few notes about this because I think it's bad selection, bad team selection from Carlo. We've got players out, but John Joe Kenny and Niels Nkunku come in at full backs and they're not able deputies to Coleman and Dean. He's also got Sigurdsson and Gomez both playing out wide.
Yeah.
Neither of you would be a winger as long as they've got a hole in their arse, like.
No.
And the other one, I mean, James isn't there, and I remember texting you at the time saying I never want to see us play without James again. But I also completely forgot that Andy Carroll had gone back there.
Yeah, Andy Carroll's second spot. He was number 7, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's a bit rum, isn't it? Wasn't he wearing number 2 at Reading?
Yeah, yeah. He's ripping up at Bordeaux now, isn't he, in the lower French league? Yeah.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't need the money. I kind of like that because he's obviously just doing it for the love of footy, isn't he, and living in the south of France, which isn't exactly bad. But, he could easily retire with the money made from his move to Liverpool and West Ham, so good on him. But, yeah, it's him. I think that's what really pisses me off about both defeats in Newcastle this season is that they're a really bad outfit at this point, aren't they? And Carlo, although Carlo beat them the previous season in his first visit to St. James's, he has a bit of a mare against them. Others outside that, there's the 2-2 when we're winning 2-0 in the 93rd minute. And then there's the two games in this season. And obviously, we'll get part two of this. We'll get to the game at Goodison. The Blues then make it 3 defeats on the spin at home to Manchester United. It's an early kickoff, like we've discussed in the previous episode. It's an early kickoff at Goodison Park. Pickford's back in goal, and the Blues take the lead through Bernard. But again, they're outclassed a little bit here, aren't they? It's it's really frustrating. Bruno Fernandes gets a brace, and I think the most annoying thing is Edinson Cavani getting a goal. In fact, he plays against us 3 times this season, scores in every game, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's more annoying to me the little rat boy Bruno Fernandes gets a couple of goals, though.
He's scored more goals against us, hasn't he?
He's one of them players in joint 22nd on the list.
Yeah, but he's in a short space of time as well, though, isn't he?
In between, so this is in alphabetical order, he's in between Jermaine Defoe and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank.
Oh, Jimmy Floyd, what a player, mate. I love Jimmy Floyd.
Mad bastard as well.
Yeah, I remember that free kick he scored for Borough against City with like no backlift and broke the post and bar. What a player. But look, the Blues are struggling a little bit here, and it's also a time where there's a bit of needle between fans in the Premier League, because do you not remember around this time, I think it was where they advertised that game on like for 15 quid on box office. It was Fulham against Sheffield United.
There was a few of them.
They started it wasn't doing probably, it. Like, no one bought it. Like, protesting. Yeah, was like, no, you're taking the piss now.
That was what, I think that was what convinced them to get rid of it, because it was a ridiculous idea. It just shows you how, the powers that be just can't help themselves trying to monetize every aspect of the game.
It definitely shows avarice, doesn't it?
They couldn't just let us have the goodwill of, this season, every game's just going to be on the telly. Like, just fucking run with it. Like, we're all sitting at home. There's a pandemic.
Yeah. The thing is, it's not like everything's on the BBC or Freeview or the majority of games, I know there's the odd game on BBC during the pandemic, but, you know, and Amazon, but, you know, if it's Amazon, BT Sports and Sky, people have to pay for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, they're not exactly, you know, those subscriptions didn't go down particularly during the pandemic. So,
it only happened for a few weeks, I remember, but yeah, there was, apparently,
I think there was like two or three games. Someone, I think, there was that much of a backlash. It was just,
I
like,
think Liverpool had one. We didn't have any. Liverpool had one.
Yeah.
But there was, apparently, the viewing figures were startlingly low.
And I think the Fulham v Sheffield United was the one where, like, no one watched. Everyone was just like, yeah. I think it was genuine. Like, there was like a few hundred reviews. People like, I'm not paying 15 quid for that. Because both those teams floundered this season. And funny enough, that segues into our next game. After losing three games on the spin and another international break, the Blues go to Fulham on the 22nd of November. Needless away kit, but they still look boss in the amber kit, don't they, Kev? And we take the lead really quickly through DCL after 40 seconds. The reason I remember this was, I don't know if it was you, but someone in the WhatsApp group was trying to wind me up by saying, do you know who scored the fastest goal in the Premier League for Everton? It was Nick Barmby against Middlesbrough in 99, but someone had got some misinformation, because I rightly pointed out at this point it was still John Ebel against Wimbledon in 1996.
Okay.
So we take a really quick lead.
Was that a wind-up, or was it just like a genuine mistake?
I think they were trying to wind me up, but on the basis of a genuine mistake, if that makes sense. It was being raised to goad me.
Okay,
because it was going on like some Twitter site was saying, oh, the fastest ever goal is actually by Nick Barmby. And I was like, that's not correct. And I listed a few. And then I was vindicated, because I remember, like, I think the club did a montage, didn't they? Yeah. Like a YouTube video with all the quickest goals. I'm pretty sure they did around that time. So we play some nice football in this game. Obviously, DCL gives us the lead. Bobby Di Cordova Reid gets an equaliser. But, you know, we're playing some lovely football. Decore gets his first Everton goal to make it 2-1. Dean gets another assist. You know, DCL gets another goal. You know, James is playing some wonderful stuff. He's back in the team, back from injury, you know, and he's involved. A wonderful pass, I think, to Seamus Coleman for Decore's goal. To love, I don't know if you watched this one back, but it was a lovely piece of play. Yeah. It really opened Fulham up, didn't it?
Yeah, it was. And Carlo's gone with a bit of a different formation as well. He's gone with like three at the back with Iwobi and Dean as well, backs, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And it's working, to be honest. I think Iwobi, you know, the spells in Everton, is Everton clear, where Iwobi goes to him back. And although I wouldn't say it's his best position, he's never really left you down there, does he? I think he's all right, generally, when he plays at wing-back.
Bullen, by the way, Scott Parker's got some decent players here. It's a bit of a surprise that he got relegated so comfortably.
Given how bad they were, when you look like they've got Mitrovic, they've got Di Cordova Reid, they've got Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Joachim Andersen has gone back to Fulham now. He's a cracking player. You know, Anthony Robinson's not figuring at all, is he? He's just like on the bench.
Anthony Robinson plays.
I'm sorry, I'm getting confused with the game of Goodison. Sorry, that's what I'm getting confused with. Ivan Cavaliero, I mean, the second half.
Adam Lookman's there.
Of course he is, looking back, that's not definitely not a side. It's not a side shouldn't be relegated, but it shouldn't be relegated so comfortably, should it? You know, they should put more of a fight up, you think, don't you? Now, the second half, although we win, doesn't go too well. Andy Maddley actually gives a penalty for once, unlike when he's at Goodison Park and Ashley Young gets pulled down, which fortunately for us, Ivan Cavaliero misses. But then we're playing some poor stuff in the second half, and Ruben Loftus-Cheek, again, another really good player, gets one back for Fulham. But there's some of the kind of impact just going forward is Luca Dean gets injured in this game, doesn't he?
Yeah, and that goal as well. The Loftus-Cheek goal comes like less than a minute after the penalty miss, so penalty miss doesn't matter. But we're really up against it in the second half. We don't play well, and you kind of hanging on to get a win that felt like we really needed, because the season was in danger of like the arse going out of it already.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people look back at the season with rose-tinted glasses, but it was just that start. It did kind of. There's bits where it falls away pretty quickly in this, isn't there? It's quite tempestuous in some respects. And it's mad because our away form is great. You know, we end up winning 11 away games, but we only win 6 at Goodison, don't we? It's also mad that the team finished 10th with 17 wins, by the way. Shows how mad the league is in this COVID season. We're then back to Goodison for our next game. And for the first time in 17 years, Leeds are the visitors to Goodison Park. And probably going to contradict myself here. As much as I thought he did okay at right wing back, Iwobi's at left wing back as Carlo tries to make light of not having Luca Dean. That doesn't really work as much. And we're down by goal. Rafinha, it's not a great display against Leeds, is it, Kev?
No, Leeds have got that messy maroon kit on for no reason.
And do you know what? Isn't it really similar to the Leicester one? I feel like they've just put different badges on them, haven't they?
Mason Holgate's the captain as well. Weirdly. Seems a couple of other players in there that get the nod over him, but he plays Tom Davis.
Because of his personality, though, because we spoke about some of the doubts. Yeah. But it's more because he's a bit of a vocal character, isn't he?
Tom Davis plays right wing back, like you say, Iwobi moves to left. It's just again, we've talked about it in other seasons. It's square pegs in round holes, and you usually get caught up by that.
You do. I think it's just frustrating in this game because a lot of Leeds, this is probably certainly Leeds' best season in their brief return to the Premier League in this decade. They're there for the taking, aren't they? They're for the taking. So it's a frustrating Saturday night at Goodison, but hey ho, that ends November. We start December again away from home in the wonderful amber kit. But we start it at Burnley, we're languishing, but we make a pretty poor start because they take the lead through Robbie Brady early doors, don't they? There's actually something that happens in this game though that is actually quite important for the season in some respects. Fabian Delph comes in from one of only two starts. He makes 6 sub appearances. There's one we're going to discuss in particular in part 2. But in very much in keeping with large parts of his career, he limps off after 29 minutes. And it kind of forces Carlo's hand, doesn't it? Because Ben Goffey ends up shifting to left back and we move away from this wing back system, which is starts to flounder a little bit. And we look much better for it, don't we, Kev? With a back 4 and Andre Gomez playing in midfield.
Yeah, and Alan, who's given away the ball for that first goal, plays a great pass for the Charleston to set up Calvert-Lewin for our equaliser. Mm-hmm. There's also a James
it's
pass.
It's a goal, isn't it? It's a smart goal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's clinical. There's also a James pass to Gylfi Sigurdsson late on, which goes through Charlie Taylor's legs. That is just beautiful. But Sigurdsson can't finish it. It gets saved by Nick Pope. Yeah. Michael Keane's the captain in this one. Again, a couple of other characters that feels like could have been given the armband here, but I don't know. It's against his former club, I suppose. But he's our fifth starting captain in 11 league games.
Right, so we've obviously had Coleman, Holgate, Keane. Sigurdsson?
Yeah.
Sigurdsson would have been one. And Mina?
No. It was Lucas Dean at Craven Cottage.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, yeah. You know what? That's fair. It's mad because he's only been in a couple of seasons, but he is one of the more senior players.
Dean's the designated vice captain, isn't he?
Yeah. You know, and look, you know, we're recording this in 2025, and 5 years on, he'll always come towards the autumn crease. He's still playing brilliantly for Aston Villa. I think going back, I really appreciate when I was watching the season. I actually appreciate how much of a, I don't mean this to dig out Mikhailenko, but selling Dean for Mikhailenko, how much of a misstep it is in terms of the quality of the team. I think it's evident when you watch this because Dean wasn't as good as Baines, but he's probably the best option we could have got in that position to replace Baines when we did, if that makes sense, in terms of his quality. And
yeah, it does. You know, something else I remember from this game. So this game was, I think, the day after the final of that year's I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which was much rejigged and took place in a castle in Wales rather than in, you know, the Australian jungle.
Yeah.
Normally I don't watch that show because, you know, there was like fuck all else going on. I watched it. And that Jordan North, the DJ, who's the Burnley fan, came second on it. He's spoken about Burnley a lot, so about how Turf Moor was his happy place. Yeah. And they had it on the holdings at the side. They kept flashing up this message: "Congratulations, Jordan North. I'm coming second on I'm a Celebrity."
That's amazing. I have no recollection of that, and I'll tell you why this is going to be sentimental. But I remember this game really well because it was the first time I moved to the Whittle in the summer of 2020, and this was the day because there was some easing and restrictions and zones and stuff because the lockdown in November had ended. This was the first time my parents come to the house to see it, and they're in a bubble with my sister. And although it was against the rules, it was the first time I got to hug my mum since the pandemic started because, you know, just happened for a range of reasons. I'm sure a lot of people remember.
Fucking hell, Boris Johnson. What's going on here? I wasn't hugging my ma. Or
no, I shouldn't. It was the one hug we had in like a year, mate. Probably broke the rules, but it was nice. It was a nice moment, if that makes sense. It was a good, you know, we were still like being sensible. We were like, it was December, you know, we had people around the house with like the windows open. Do you know what I mean? Even though it was freezing, we were just like trying to be safe, etc. But after this game, we're down to ninth, Kevin. It's feeling the same old with the Blues, isn't it? In terms of, you know, it feels like there might be another false dawn. However, we then do Frank Lampard Jr. and go on a bit of a decent run of form, which funnily enough starts against Chelsea, Frank Lampard Jr.'s Chelsea at Goodison Park. Now, what was significant about this game, Kev, in the scheme of things? What was the first time that happened in a while in this game?
So, the first... So coming out of... Gosh, I can't even get my head around all the different lockdowns now.
Yeah, because with the zones at this point, like different parts of the country.
Yeah, that was it. The government had come up with this fucking batshit idea where you could be in a tier, and most places in the country were in tier 3, which meant you couldn't do anything, just normal lockdown. Yeah. We were in tier 2, which meant that there was you know, limited kind of public gatherings that could take place, and I think the only cities in the country where it was happening were Liverpool, you know, in terms of Premier League teams, with Liverpool and London, and
I think Southampton did as well. I seem to remember Raheem Sterling being in Tooth for City at Southampton,
okay,
and being glad
Southampton
fans
as well. And in the end, London got theirs taken away because I remember watching the World Darts Championship, and so that started on, you know, say it was like the 15th of December. Mm-hmm. London were getting bounced back into Tier 3 the next day, so it was pretty depressing because it was like,
yeah,
about 1,000 people at Ali Pali for the first night of the darts, and you were watching it thinking like, oh yeah, it's nice seeing a crowd of people there, but you just know that the next night there's going to be no one there. Yeah, it was pretty depressing, but yeah, for us, yeah, it meant that we were allowed to have 2,000 fans at Goodison, and it's just great having fans at the match. Just having any kind of authentic noise was brilliant. I was dead jealous of the people who got to go to this, because you could enter the ballot, couldn't you? You did them for the Chelsea game and the upcoming home games against Arsenal, Man United in the Cup, Manchester City and West Ham.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was the one to go to because it was the first one.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, you know, it's a really good result for the Blues. You touched on in the previous episode, didn't you? What gave you confidence in 21-22 was our record against Chelsea, and you know, we vanquished them in this game. We get a penalty, which Gylfi Sigurdsson converts, but I just want to talk about the penalty because it's given by your mate, John Moss. Not your mate, so I was talking about him on the Blue Room. We were saying like how unfit he was, even though he used to be a PE teacher. It was James Miller's PE teacher. But Edouard Mendy, what is he doing with his penalty, Kev? Because he just comes out and absolutely cleans Donna Calvert-Lewin out, doesn't he?
Nearly takes his head off.
It's so stupid. Well, we're recording this on a day where Kepa has giveaway penalty for warm-up against Spurs. It's a very different incident, but it's similar in that you've got someone going away from the goal that they don't need to challenge. It's just absolutely idiotic, isn't it?
Yeah. And the penalty itself, the Charleston wants to take it, but Gylfi Sigurdsson pulls rank, a bit like Hayek or Carver would on the wire, you know, a little point to the stripes on the sleeve.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Normally, when that happens, normally the player goes on to miss the penalty, you know, after there's been a bit of an argument. But Sigurdsson's cooler than that, isn't he? And just kind of rolls it in.
Do you know what? It's mad looking back because Sigurdsson was maligned around this time. I mean, his first couple of seasons at Everton, he's really impactful. I think people, you know, he's popular amongst the fans, but he had a bit of a dip in form. You say he had a dip in form, but he's still contributing goals and assists, isn't he? You know, he's not even necessarily a first choice player, but when he plays, he gives us options. And I think the diff we talked about in 21-22 in the previous two episodes, I think a lot of that comes down to us being so short on creativity, losing Sigurdsson, Bernard, Luka Dean and James in such a short space of time and only bringing in Andros Townsend, Damari Gray to replace them. There was always going to be a shortfall, wasn't there?
Yeah, Sigurdsson was the midfielder that we had that would get behind the centre forward.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have anyone else for a while after he disappeared.
No, definitely not. And
but your mate Lampard Jr., he's doing well here, like.
They're top, aren't they, coming as this, I think?
The third, but they're right up there.
That's what I meant, yeah. It's not, like, I think if they win, they go top is what it is, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and doing a great job then when you consider that he's got both Timo Werner and Kai Havertz in the starting lineup.
But he has also sanctions spending like 100 million quid on that too, hasn't he?
I was just going to say, no, but seriously. I think he was doing a really good job at Chelsea. It made sense to appoint him there, given that they couldn't sign anyone. He was the kind of player that would be able to blend young players into the first team. They've got some.
He only has like 6 bad weeks, doesn't he? He has a bad month this month, and then he gets sacked. Really, that's it. Like, you know, it's a bit. I mean, I suppose they'll argue they're vindicated because Tuchel goes on to win the Champions League in the same season, but Lampard just has six iffy weeks.
It's hard luck. You know what I mean? They get a better manager in, and if that, I always say, if there's an opportunity for that, then clubs are right to take it.
Yeah, well, you said it about Pochettino with Adkins in episode 4, didn't you? It's not necessarily pacing against the manager, it's just we've got an opportunity. Because to be fair, Tuchel had just took PSG close to the Champions League the previous season, hadn't he?
Yeah. And speaking of close, big cat nonce, Kurt Zouma goes close, nearly scores against us.
Yeah, he does, Kurt. I was always gutted we didn't sign him permanently. I thought he was a good player for Everton, Kurt Zouma. Not cool what he's done.
He was all right. It was just it was too much. He wanted too much money. He was getting mad wages at West Ham. It wasn't worth it.
Yeah, yeah. No, but like we spent like the whole summer the previous year like chasing him, and then Lampard, like, no, I want to keep him here, didn't he?
Yeah.
So we then follow that up with a trip to another high flying team, Leicester City, who were going strong. You know, they finished fifth the previous season. They finished fifth this season and go on to win the FA Cup, which I think makes the downfall we discussed in the previous two episodes and in episode 8 even more startling, you know, when you look back in terms of the speed of it. But this is probably the best performance in the mint blue kit. Sorry, the mint green kit, even mint blue. There's no fans there, like you said, because the tears, but the Toffees go with a flat back four to Leicester and they win 2-0. We're pretty imperious this night, aren't we, Kev?
That's the thing. I made a note on the Chelsea game is that Carlo kind of stumbles on something here that'll be a bit of a bedrock for the good results to come over the next few months, and it's that back four of centre halves.
Mm-hmm.
Holgate at right back and Godfrey at left back with Keane and Mina in the middle, and there's that great meme that I couldn't find and I was gutted. And it was the four lads in skinny jeans meme with their heads on it.
I will find it. Hopefully by the time we do the socials for this episode, we'll have it out. It works really well. You know, Richie gives us the lead with a great goal, and then Holgate, like he did in 21-22, gets a goal at the King Power.
Richie's a great goal. I thought, didn't Schmeichel kind of let it squirm through his hands?
No, I think it's a good finish. It's from outside the box. I think it's a good finish, personally. I thought it was a good finish. I thought it was a good finish. But maybe I'm being generous because I love Richie, but I think...
You do have your favourites, like...
Oh, yeah, you got it, haven't you? You talk about rose-tinted glasses. I think I just look at this game in rose-tinted because it's a bit like the Brighton performance you spoke about earlier. And it seems mad that only two games ago against Burnley, I thought we looked last. We just looked quite serious in this game, if that makes sense, because we've gone somewhere to a side. Don't forget, this isn't just a Leicester side you're going to win the Cup. They battered City at the Etihad a few weeks earlier, hadn't they?
Yeah.
I think was it 5-2 or 5-3? You know, Leicester, they've got some great players like James Maddison, Vardy still. You know, still banging them in. They're a good side, so it's a really big win, and I think I'm really impressed with us.
Mason Holgate scores his first league goal for us there. He only scores 3 Premier League goals for us, and 2 of them are at the King Power.
That's mad, that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's a similar stat with like that, and we'll come to in part 2 when we get to a certain cup tie.
Okay.
After those 2 wins, we're absolutely flying, and we host Arsenal again with fans at Goodison. We're good this game, aren't we? We take the lead through a Rob Holding own goal, then Arsenal get a penalty, which I think we can't have any complaints about, to make it 1-1. But
Rob not exactly holding on to his hair there, is he?
Have you seen it since?
Yeah.
You seen the job he's done on it? It's tremendous, isn't it?
They work wonders, don't they?
Do you know what, mate? It keeps him happy, keeps him confident and smiling. Good on him. That's what
Speaking of hair, I put here, there's a Michael Keane 35-yarder that goes wide by a cunt here.
Yeah, Mike's in decent form in this game, but it's another centre-half who gives us a lead on half-time, Yerry Mina, and I think we spoke about it last episode, about how he's always good for goal. I always fancied Mina set pieces, you know, I always thought, yeah, he'll get on the end of this. And the mad thing is, this is probably the season where he's playing most regularly in his Everton career, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's got to be Ancelotti's effect here, but all of the centre-halves we've got here, I think they all play the best football in this season.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I think that is completely fair. I think it's Carlo keeping it simple tactically, isn't it? And look, it's a good win, and the Blues are really starting to climb up the league again, because it is a bit of a crazy season with, you know, the level playing field. You know, a lot of bizarre results across the league. You know, we end up doing the double against Arsenal, which is not something that ever happens in the good times here, apart from this. But the next game is one that I really want to hand over to you on, Kev, before we finish this episode. We've got, obviously, a little bit to go before we close 2020. The next game is a midweek League Cup tie against Manchester United, which you were able to attend. So I think the most important thing is, we lose 2-0. Cavani scores again. We're not brilliant, but what was it like being back at Goodison, Kev?
It was weird, you know. I entered the ballot. I had entered for Chelsea and Arsenal as well and wasn't successful. And I had a feeling I was going to get one of them. It was the Man United one. So I'm trying to find the email that I got from Everton here, just to see how it was worded than that, because there was a load of conditions on you being able to go to this game. And me and my sister both got tickets for this. And I remember texting my mum saying, oh yeah, me and Art only got tickets. And my mum said, why don't you ask them if you can go to the Man City game instead? And I was like, Mum, it doesn't work like that. And I was like, why anyway? And she said, because it's going to be freezing there. It's on a Wednesday night. And I was like, Mum, the City game's at like R5, you know, also in December. That's going to be freezing as well. I was like, also, this is like non-negotiable, all this. It's not like, do you want to go to the match? It's like, you know, you've got your ticket here.
Yeah.
You can only go to this match. You can only be in this seat. You've got to get there an hour and a half before kickoff. But yeah, that was the weird thing about it, was that like, you get to the ground an hour and a half before, but there was just like nothing to do. Because the catering wasn't open. I remember they gave us a mince pie and a bottle of water when we went in.
I went to a game late in the season. I got a Mars bar and a bottle of water.
I think mine was seasonal very much, because it was 2 days before Christmas. But this meant that I had to. You had to provide proof that you had a negative COVID test.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you had to go to an actual test and sent not just the lateral flow of home, didn't you?
Yeah, I'd been to one off Park Road on that day, and I had to go there again the next day on Christmas Eve, you know, for Christmas. So all of this as well, while fucking Boris Johnson and his criminal enterprise, he called the government, was just fucking doing whatever they wanted. Like, if this happened again, a pandemic like this, you'd never get this level of compliance from the public that you got here.
That good faith's
just been eradicated, hasn't it?
Oh, it totally has. Totally.
But we got in and it was freezing. It was really cold. Which meant that the face mask actually came in handy. And I just wore me one from work that they gave us, because it was blue and white. And there's a picture of me as well that I've got somewhere here because the Sky cameras pat me at some point. It's just quite funny. I had like me Everton Rudolph Christmas t-shirt on.
You did. You look smart in it, mate.
So yeah, I remember thinking I was gutted I didn't bring a flask because it was really cold and I just wanted a hot drink.
Yeah.
But then yeah, before the game, they had like a quiz that you could join in with, like an interactive one on your phone.
I remember that, yeah.
They were showing, I think it was Stoke v Tottenham in another quarter final on the big screen. So you could watch that. But it was mad. It was just a lot of like just standing around. But it also felt great to be back as well, because
yeah,
you knew it was weird as well because you knew that different places were going back into lockdown, so you knew that this was probably just going to be fleeting. Like we're only going to get a few games of this. But it was just really nice to see the team again. It was like 9 months since I've been to. The last game felt like a lot longer than that.
Yeah, a lot happened in those 9 months, hasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, but yeah, it was just it was the Gladys Street and the top balcony, I think, where there was fans, and you had to sit far apart from each other than that. But yeah, it was boss. I got some good pictures from that night, which I'll share at some point. But I think I said I posted about it on Instagram, and I said like, you know, in spite of it all, like I loved being back there because it was a dreadful performance by the team.
we were never in this game at any
so
point.
Bad. I don't think we created any chances at all. Like
well, James is out the team because famously he doesn't turn up when we've got fans. No.
Because I'm not convinced that he actually exists.
Yeah,
we had the first 10 minutes. United could score about 3 or 4 goals. They're just absolutely all over us.
Yeah, I think it's annoying because it's not particularly. I mean, I know they finished second normally this league, but it's not a great United side, is it?
No, and there just seems to be certain players that really turn up against us, and like Nemanja Matic and Paul Pogba just completely control the midfield all game.
They boss it, don't they? They absolutely boss it, and it's a frustrating night. But I remember being buzzing for you, and obviously, you know, it's good to see fans back at Goodison, like we said about the previous two games. We then, at this point, have two games left in 2020. But
yeah, I'm just going to go back to this because
go on, yeah.
Couple of other things that I remember from that night. So, the fella behind us, firstly, I remember the fans were singing more than anything, more than singing any Everton songs, they were singing Manchester's Full of Shit, which just seemed pointless when there was no Man United fans there.
Yeah, but who are you golden? You're not golden anyone, yeah.
But speaking of golden, this fella behind me just kept fucking shouting at Dean Henderson all game. He was obsessed with him.
And what was the problem?
Our mate, future Everton player Donny van der Beek, starts this game as well. And it might have been the same fella. Whenever van der Beek got the ball, just started singing Davy Klaassen, ole, ole, ole.
Do you know what that's called? That's called foreshadowing, mate. That's why we ended up with van der Beek. Next season, I'm blaming that fella.
I forgot to mention it last week, last time out.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, I remembered a time when we had the baby, when he was about maybe about 2 months old. And I was thinking back to like how tired you are in those early days.
Yeah.
Like, I never felt tiredness like it. But it means that, you know, you'd have a lot of, you know, waking up in the night to do feeds and that.
Yeah.
Or to just tend to him like if he's crying. Yeah. But I remember just being woken up by him and Gemma saying to me, can you check on the baby? And I said, and I was about 90% asleep here, and I remember specifically I said to her, it's all right, he's with Donny van der Beek. Why?
And then did you have that moment where like, you wake up and the realisation of how stupid what you've said is?
Yeah. But in my mind, it made perfect sense, and also the baby was in safe hands.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, obviously, it's not as lovely as stories. But I remember when I was younger, sometimes I was a student, my dad would ring me to wake me up, just to keep in touch, choke us away from home and stuff. Yeah. And one morning, he'd rang me, he's like, get up, and I was like, half asleep, man, don't worry, it's okay, I've got my giraffe. And it made like perfect sense in my head. And then I just heard this silence down the phone. And it kind of startled me awake. And he just went, wake the fuck up, put the phone down.
He's like, that's your mate. He's fucking shagging giraffes. Get him all.
Yeah, he's having a giraffe, yeah. He's having a giraffe over there.
He's quite literally having a giraffe. The other thing I remember was on the way home, I had quite a cold drive home down down the waterfront back up to Egbert.
So it must be hot, dead weird coming back from a match, but it's deadly quiet.
Yeah. Well, I had the phone in on, and do you remember there was that incident with Charleston where he got clobbered by Little Rat Boy and Eric Bailly?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They did him and it left him like half conscious and he was out with a concussion.
Yeah.
On the phone in on the way back, the Everton phone in, fella rang up, told him about the match, Evertonian. And then about 30 seconds in, just switches and goes, oh, you know what, though, I am pleased that the Charleston got what he deserved for that tackle on Thiago. And so the host just didn't respond to it, like, because they, you know, it was taking a minute to realise that he'd been rustled by a cop out.
Yeah.
So he just repeated himself and went, did you hear what I said? I said that the Charleston got his comeuppance, didn't he, for what he did to Thiago?
Oh, no, he's losing now. He was from winning point, but then he's losing it, isn't he?
What a sad bastard, though. Like 2 months after that, like, he rings up and Everton phone in at, like, what, nearly 11 o'clock at night, 2 days before Christmas.
Mate, they're not bothered about us, Brian. I was on the, I looked on the Blue Rooms page recently, you know, on Apple Podcast. They have, like, reviews.
Yeah.
And after the derby, some fella just left a comment. It was once done, says, like, win 2-2 since 1995 and a trophy emoji. I'm like, why would you be asked? Why would you care?
It's clearly our cup final, like.
Yeah, clearly is ours, you know, always. But I just love that he's onto a winner and then he's repeated himself and like lost all credibility as a rustler, hasn't he?
I think he panicked because the co-host didn't respond to it because they were probably just kind of like looking at each other and like thinking, oh, what do we do here? So I think he might have panicked a bit that it actually hadn't landed and he hadn't heard what he said.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just like, oh, what a sad bastard.
Boss, that is sad. And yeah, it's sad that we're out the cup, but hey ho, these things happen. You know, I'm sure
also,
we'll go on.
Talking of head injury here, like, you know, it's not someone's hurt his knee. Like, this is very serious. There's a lad there.
Someone's hurt his knee.
There's a lad here who's out.
So knee.
Christmas going to be ruined because he doesn't know where he is. But, you know, there you go. It's the
he's
kind
not
of class
going to Christmas now.
No.
Now he's not going to go home for Christmas, Chris Rea style. Speaking of Christmas, Boxing Day, we visit the...
Don't you want to say speaking of Chris Rea then?
Chris Rea is a Bramall Lane into witness the Blues in a game against a struggling Sheffield United. We're not great, but it's a big win, isn't it? Late winner to Gylfi Sigurdsson, and we climbed to second in the table, having been ninth before the Chelsea game, which is...
Yeah.
It's really mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a couple of weeks, we're right up there, and it's a good stat to throw out there that... You know, you can compare to later in the season. We were second on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Can't remember who was first.
But, no, I can't. I just remember that we were second, and that's what matters, really.
On a grim note, this is where the death toll comes into play. Our one member of the death toll, George Balder.
Oh, it was really sad, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, weird, wasn't it? Just like kind of mysterious one.
Yeah, it sounds like a really bad accident or something, doesn't it? It's really sad, that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
rest in peace, George.
Yeah. Rest in power, our friend. And yeah, we think this game is our penultimate game of 2020, but it turned out that's not the case, doesn't it, Kev? Because our scheduled game against Manchester City gets cancelled.
You went to this, didn't you?
Very good, very good.
To be continued.
So until next time, it's been the Good Times Everton podcast.